This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 37, A Good Environment. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about what makes a good team environment in a cricket team. Some success stories from the members of the podcast team this week, so listen out for some practical tips. There's also questions about how to better play a front foot drive and how to speed up if you're a spinner and you fall away a little bit. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket. No matter who you are and no matter where you are in the world, we can help you out. And who are we? Well, my name is David Hinchliffe. I introduce things and I help keep a tight rein on the two other presenters of this show, the first of which is the director of cricket coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras.
Hello, how are you?
Very good, thanks. Very refreshed after my Canadian adventure.
It seems like ages since we've had a proper chat, us lot.
It is, yeah. Niagara Falls was excellent.
You didn't decide to jump over the top and go in a barrel then?
No, not quite. They didn't have any barrels on sale, but okay. it was quite tempting. And the second presenter on the show is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, David.
And we have plenty to talk about, as it's been a while since we got together to have a chat. And one of the things I was thinking about was a recent article of yours, actually, Garras, to do with your very successful under-15s team that you looked after in the summer. And I was thinking about cricket environments and what makes a good environment and how players can create that and how coaches can help influence that. So, I mean, you're at the sharp end of that, Garras, with having a great environment that was successful this year. So, in fact, you said it was one of the best teams that you've ever coached. So, tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, it was. You know, they were absolutely brilliant, and I think probably if I look back on it, they looked after me more than I looked after them over the course of some of it. And certainly, when we played on that finals day, I think the results of that environment that you talk about, that a lot of the guys had invested a lot of time into, was very evident. And I don't think I've ever sat through two games of cricket and had such little impact on what was going on. They just managed themselves brilliantly, which is really, I think, the most pleasing thing that we can ever have as a coach is that we're largely redundant and the players go out there and do their own stuff, and also that they support each other in a way that is, you know, in relation to this under 15 team, way beyond their years and maturity. So how do you create it? Well, it takes time. I think in the article I alluded to the fact that one of the benefits that we had is we went away to India for a two-week period just before Christmas. And that was the first time that myself and the other coaches had worked with that group of players. And being away on tour allows you to spend a heap of time with each other and to get to know each other and to live through the trials and tribulations that is India as well, which was really useful, to play against some really good players, to get beaten very heavily a couple of times and to review effectively. But I can't underestimate the power of that review process that we had throughout the whole of the year, that stop, start, continue review process where the players would lead it, they would facilitate it. All I would do is write it up on a board, take a picture of that board and then distribute that around the team and keep monitoring some of the consistent themes that came up. But the review process and the language that they spoke to each other in just improved over the course of the year. And towards the end of the season, even though, you know, they're a great side, but they're not the most talented team I've ever worked with, I always said to them that for them to lose a game of cricket, it would mean that either they didn't get their stuff right at all, but if they did get their stuff right, then it would take an individual player on the opposition's team to have the game of their life. And that's rare that that happens, isn't it? So, yeah, it takes a lot of time. It was a seven-month process, but everybody bought into it, including the parents, who were fantastic, and it was a great experience.
And how long would you say it takes those good habits to get locked into place, that review process that you were talking about, Gareth? How long does it take before you're stopping saying, right, let's do this review, and they're just starting to do it naturally themselves without you even mentioning it?
Great, yeah, it's a great question. I think that varies dependent on each team and also on how relentless you are around that. And any opportunity that myself or the other coaches here at school had to tap into that review process over the course of the week that when we were working with people, we would do. And what we found is as over time, then the instances where we were having to facilitate or start that conversation were dropping off because either their behaviours were just happening in front of us and we were seeing that working very positively in its own right, or, and this is the thing that I was really proud of, is that certain players within the group would do the coaching role, really, I suppose, for us. And that's when you know you're onto a good thing. And they were brilliant. You know? And it wasn't just the captain and vice-captain who were outstanding and are both exceptional cricketers in their own right. But also the 12th man. You know, the 12th man in the final was the guy who was organising practice sessions throughout the summer holiday to keep the guys that weren't playing county cricket in as good a nick as possible, and you know, and he was inviting me to those sessions to come along as opposed to me inviting them, which is just, you know, magnificent, really.
And Lavers, you've had success this year as well. How much is that down to a good environment within the team?
Yeah, probably quite heavily, actually. I'm probably in a similar boat to Gareth there, where when I think about the final that we had, which was a couple of weeks ago now, and when I think about probably the semi-final and those games in the latter stages, the role of the coach and myself wasn't particularly heavy on impact that I had. A lot of the work had kind of been done earlier on and probably in previous years and over a longer period of time with a lot of these lads, because I've worked with them for some of them for 4 or 5 years who've been at the school for since they were very young and some of them in the last couple of years. But when it came to the actual day, you've got to have that element of trust within the group that they've done the work, they've made the decisions in their head before, so they'll be able to make them again. They are looking to be bright and to think about how they're doing things. So they're actually trying to take control of the situation they're in. And they're able to stay calm under pressure. And that's one of the strengths that our boys showed, was that they were very calm under pressure. They had been in these situations or similar situations before. And because of that, there was a very calm environment a lot of the time. And during the game, we were at stages where we needed 40 runs to win and we only had 2 wickets to go and run rate was creeping up. But the boys out in the middle never really sort of wavered on that. And yes, there was a little bit of nerves on the side, but as soon as people took to the field, they were all very, very calm in the way they did things. And I think in comparison to the opposition, that was a key factor for us, was our calm environment as opposed to their probably looked like quite stressful environment at times, and that kind of helped us make good decisions at the end. And as long as we made good decisions, we were happy that we'd given it everything we could, and we'd either win or we'd lose, but we'd make the right decisions along the way.
And these things can be quite complex sometimes, you know, dynamics of teams and individuals, and lots of players have different interactions with each other, and there's the coach in the mix, and it can get quite complex at times. So have we got any simple pieces of advice maybe that somebody can take, a coach or a player can take to their team and implement, that would help to push them forward towards a better team environment? Something practical I'm thinking about.
Well, I think from a coaching point of view, you've got to make your environment has got to be authentic to the things that you really believe in as a coach, or underpin your philosophy as a coach. Because if that doesn't happen, then what do you fall back on when things get tough, when a player kicks off, when you lose 2 games on the bounce? You have to go back to the things that are most akin with yourself. And looking at all of the best managers, not just in cricket, but all of the best managers, whilst they would adapt every now and again as the game you know, the game of cricket developed, or the game of football or rugby developed, you know, over the years, their philosophy would be largely similar. So you've got to be authentic, and it sounds as if that's what Sam's done down at PGS, is he's created a group of players very much in the image of himself, really, and the things that I hold dear, I make sure that I really instill, and hopefully that they come on board with those things. You never stop a player from being their own individual, but equally the things that you most believe in that happen around cricket teams, it's got to be about you as a coach. I'm a massive believer in that. You look at the England setup now, and the change in approach that the players have got as a result of having a different philosophy that's underpinning it, coming from Paul Farbrace and Trevor Bayliss, and that's very evident now. But they're being authentic to themselves, and then everybody else adapts around it, because players do that. They probably do it better than coaches.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with a yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that the team want to say. And I've got the questions this week, so let's go. Question one. Asking questions helps you better take criticism.
Yes.
No.
Question two. The attributes of baseball hitters apply to cricket batsmen.
Yes.
Yes.
Question three. Pressure is a sign you have a chance to excel.
Yes.
Yes.
Now let's dip into the mailbag. We have a couple of questions that have been sent in by listeners to this show, or perhaps readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website. Either way, we do our best to answer those questions, and at the end of the show, we decide on the best question of the week that wins a prize of an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions in to us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, but we'll give you other contact details at the end of the show. So the first question is from Kashif, and Kashif says, would I be correct in saying that when playing a forward defence or a front foot shot, the head is as far ahead of the front foot as possible on contact, and also the head is directly over the ball, so that if a photo was taken of this, a straight line perpendicular to the ground on contact with the ball can be formed by the ball and the head, with the front foot not on that line? I hope I've expressed myself clearly. So that's a very technical batting question. What do we think?
Yeah, it can be correct in saying that, but equally it doesn't always like that. And it comes back to people having a different way of moving out of their stance to get to the ball. Some people lead with their head, which means that the head often is in front of the foot, so the foot moves underneath the line of the head, or tries to catch up with the line of the head to stop you from falling flat on your face. Whereas some people, and generally the guys that have a wider base and tend to push using the ground forces rather than trying to unbalance themselves by moving their head early, you don't tend to find that their head is always in front of the contact when they're playing defensively or attackingly. So you look at a number of stills. I think stills are always interesting to look at. They don't always tell the whole story because they're only a snapshot of that moment in time. But if you look for a front foot drive and you on Google with all the pictures, and you remove all the ones that don't show ball contact on the back, then it would be interesting for you to have a look at where people's heads are, because out of the first 1,000 pictures that you get those down to, there'll be a number that do and a number that don't have the head in front of the contact. The other thing to consider as well is that sometimes situation dictates that we make contact with the ball in slightly different points when we play a defensive shot in particular. So an example of that being that years ago I got told that when you played a defensive shot anywhere against any type of bowler, you played bat and pad together, so they would almost be jam-packed together. But obviously DRS now comes into play, which means that against spin in particular, getting getting that bat and pad together can prove troublesome. And also in longer format cricket, when you've got a man in front of a bat on the offside, playing the bat and pad jam together might be a bit of a challenge to you as well. So there's been a sort of an advancement in the way that people will play spin by getting the bat out in front of themselves. And that often means that the hands are in advance of the head position when you play defensively. So whilst it's a really good starting point, I would say, to think like that, I think we always have to look at different players playing in a different way and moving out of their stance in a different way, because that will have an effect on where the head is in relation to the contact, both attacking and defending off the front foot, and also the situation. You know, if you're facing spin, then you might be in a position where you're getting your hands out in front. If I think of a Kevin Peterson forward defensive shot against Shane Warne, and he was a pretty good player, Shane Warne, as good as there probably was over Shane Warne's career. Him and Tendulkar probably were two of the better players that played against him, but Peterson would defend with his hands miles in front of his head position. So I don't think we can be as generic, but it is a really good starting point to start exploring the subtle differences that do happen in the game of cricket.
And I guess if you've been coached one way, but naturally you do it another way, you would, if you change, you would feel that benefit straight away. You wouldn't have to necessarily have it coached into you.
Well, that's the great thing about trying both, isn't it? Is that you will get an association with one quicker than you will with the other. But equally, it's not about always saying, right, I'm going to keep doing this irrespective of what the game situation is like. Because, you know, if somebody ramps it up to 90 mile an hour plus and it starts going sideways, then it could be that you're better off trying to do it in the opposite way that you normally do, just to try and survive. So, you know, I think we've always got to be flexible. But in the main, you know, you're not going to find Chris Gayle having his head in front of his foot on too many occasions. And equally, somebody like Andrew Strauss would have done, you know, on most occasions. But there would have been times when Strauss was facing somebody who was doing something pretty special. But I'm sure that he'd have had to have adapted and changed to just try and survive in that moment, which is, you know, why cricket is such a great game, isn't it? Whether the ball's spinning, going fast, swinging, or whatever, sometimes it is about survival more than it's about, you know, banging it off the roof of the stands like Gayle does sometimes.
Next question is from Kalpner. And Kalpner says, I'm a spinner and I have an issue where I get in a position where my front foot is planted too far across from my back foot and I struggle to fully drive my hips and pivot. I also find myself slightly collapsed to the offside rather than being upright. My wrist position allows me to spin the ball well. However, I'd like to get quicker through the air and reduce my flight. I've tried using cones while training, so I'm more aligned and side on at the crease. I also think that when I cock my wrist in my run-up, I get my wrist and forearm a bit tense. I'm trying to get quicker so that I can still flight dip and turn the ball, but not be easy for batsmen to use their feet against me. What do you advise for these sort of technical faults? It can be, Gareth, can it, quite frustrating if, you know, you set up a few cone drills and then you end up, you're doing exactly the same thing as you were doing before, no matter how many cones you put down, and then you start to think, oh, what's the point in all this?
Yeah, and I think sometimes the cones can be, I don't know, more of a distraction than anything else. And you know, some people that work in our program here, when we've done realignment, whether it be a spin or whether we've done it for the seam bowlers, we found we've had probably more success without having cones in than we actually have by having them in as well. So if you're not getting the progress that you really want, then just try and think of a different way of doing it. So an example being in fast bowling, and it's something that I believe can transfer over into spin a bit, is the tent peggy stuff. You know, you wouldn't tent peg with cones in very often, or certainly I haven't done that yet, but I might be missing that a bit, but I certainly haven't done it. Because what tends to happen when you have cones is people get used to running through the cones, and then when you take them away, they just revert to type and go back to where they were before. So I think you've got to sort of like almost retrain the movement pattern. But before you do that, also work out why you're getting into that position at the crease, because it might not have anything to do with your bowling action at all. It might be have something to do with your jump and the angle of your jump. It might have something to do where your arms are when you jump into your delivery stride that drags you over. So the key thing really is to work out what it is that's misaligning you to start off with, and then to work maybe using a 4-10 peg approach or whatever one you do. But without cones, if you work out what's dragging you in, then you can do something about that. And if you can control that, then you're more likely to land where you want to. And I would definitely go down that route before sticking loads of cones and poles and all of that sort of stuff that we've seen in the past in the play. But I'm waiting to be shouted down by some people on that one. The second thing I'd say is around your attention. You described to me that you've got your wrist cocked. So I'm just cocking my wrist here as I look out over our cricket ground and in your approach. For some people, that really works, having that wrist cocked in their run-up, because it prepares them for unleashing that wrist within their action. And for some people, it works better to have that relaxed. So as they're going through their action, their wrist will rotate from a floppy or a non-tense position. So again, have a go with both and see which one works. And I'm in no position to tell you which one's going to work for you, but if you have a go at both, then you'll be able to feel that for yourself. But as Sam said right at the beginning of his bit, fantastic level of detail. It shows that you're thinking about it. My first point of call with work out what was dragging you in to misalign you at the crease, then start on that and then see where you go. I would steer personally away from cones, but I know other coaches swear by them. And the other thing I'd do is I'd experiment with having tension in my wrist by having it cocked in my approach and then not having it in there and seeing which one suits you.
Time now for the soapbox. That is 60 seconds on the clock and an uninterrupted rant or rave or comment or thought from one of the members of the team. And that person this week is Mark Garraway. Garraz, over to you.
I've literally just come out of a meeting before the podcast about a young kid who's incredibly talented in a number of different things. So what we did was get myself as a cricket coach, the hockey coach, because he's also a regional hockey player, also the music teacher because he's in the choir, he plays the piano, and also he plays the violin, and he happens to be a fantastic dancer as well. So the sort of the commitments that he's got throughout a week are absolutely bonkers. He's county on their EPP, and what we've just done is we've sat down and we've mapped out his week, and looking at the priority things, making sure that he gets the most diverse experience that he possibly can, because the boy is only 14 years old and needs to have a lot of that before he specialises in later years, and to make sure that ultimately after a whole winter and a whole summer of doing all of those things that he's still got enthusiasm to do any of them, because that's one of the most crucial things that we have as a coach, isn't necessarily to make somebody into the best that they can possibly be in our sport, but to make them the best possible person that happens to do sport or whatever else that they're interested in really, really well. So I'm watching a lad over to my left, who's a tennis player who's now in the top 200 in the world at tennis. He also 3 years ago opened the bowling for the West of England, but he's now taken that route, and I'm chuffed a bit to watch him practice every few days and also to see him winning world ranking events.
I think the thing I'm most jealous of there is the dancing.
He's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant.
I got two left feet. So, and my girlfriend is a very good dancer, so I'm often embarrassed.
Yeah, you and me both, mate. I dance with my shoulders, not anything else.
Yeah, I dance with my knees, apparently.
That means you're already a better dancer than me.
And that is the end of the show for another week. We are wrapping things up, but before we go, we've got a little bit of housekeeping. The first thing is the prize. That's the online coaching course from PitchVision, pitchvision.com. And we had two questions this week, both pretty good ones. One from Kashif about playing the ball out, leading with the head when you're playing a front foot drive. And one from Kalpner about bowling a little bit quicker and getting that hip a little bit more open when he's a spinner. So which one did you prefer this week, Garraz?
I'm going to go with Kalpner's this week, purely because it's about leg spin. And I think, and certainly in our country, having Adil Rashid bowling over the last few weeks has given us more interest than we normally got. And there aren't that many around the world, are there? So hopefully that will help some leg spinners get better, and also some people who are coaching leg spinners get better.
Yeah, precisely. There's a bit of a lack of leg spinners, especially in the UK. So it'd be nice to get a few coming through. We do love spin, leg spin on this show. Now, Gareth, if someone was listening, whether they're a leg spinner or not, and they wanted to get their question read out, they wanted to get it answered, and maybe even win that prize, how could they get in touch with the show?
Well, they could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coaching@pitchvision.com.
That's right. Social media is also a way of getting in touch with us. Our Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy and Twitter is @pitchvisionacad. You can contact us in that way, or you can just start following us or liking us, whatever the particular way of doing that is. And if you want to listen to this show every week, then you can do so automatically by going into your favorite podcast app, doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. Click on the subscribe button. There is also more details on the Pitch Vision website at pitchvision.com/academy. You've got the show notes there. You've got ways of streaming it online. And what you need to do is click on the podcast link there, and there's all the previous show notes coming back, right back to show one. Now, that's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas.